evil is back. The Drool King Lotor has returned with a dark energy that can destroy the galaxy. Our only hope? The Voltron Force, a team of five heroic pilots that control five awesome robot lions. When Lotor's monstrous robot beasts attack, the lions come together to form Voltron, Defender of the Universe.
Welcome, Voltron fans. This is Mark Morrell, your host for Let's Voltron, the official Voltron podcast. And we have a lot of things to go over this week, so I wanted to get you updated on the latest Voltron toys that are available. The latest and greatest in the world of Voltron toys is the new Pop Vinyl from Funko that has fans going pre-order crazy. This 3¾-inch robotic glory constructed of the separate robot lions is a must-have for every fan's desk. Pre-order here at Voltron.com and get one for everyone on your Christmas list. Also available, let's not forget about the Ultimate DX Transformable Voltron from Toynami that's here next month. Get yours now before it's too late. Super deformed, totally transformable, pilots and weapons included. Again, store.voltron.com. This just in. For our Dish Network fans, make sure to check out Channel 217 WHT to find Voltron Defending the Universe every day at 2 p.m. That's Voltron on the Dish Network, Channel 217 WHT at 2 p.m. every day. Now, you guys remember we talked about the Saber Rider Kickstarter? They're making a video game because guess what? Saber Rider fans did it. The Kickstarter campaign was a total success, and then some, finishing with 128% of the funding required to get a Saber Rider video game launched. Many thanks to the 1,072 fans who backed this project. Much, much more to come on this in the future. Also available, Denver the Last Dinosaur, he's your friend, and now he's in Walmart stores. Denver the Last Dinosaur DVDs are now available at Walmart.com. Check out the first and second sets just released, or go crazy and get the whole set. Now don't forget, Wednesday, October 21st, is the second issue of Voltron from the Ashes available from Dynamite. Alright, so you can get Cullen Bunn and Blackie Shepherd's second issue of Voltron from the Ashes, October 21st. All right, fans, it's now the time of the podcast where we're going to talk to a very special guest that you guys have been waiting for a very long time. And we finally have him here today with us. See if you can recognize this voice.
Activate interlock. Dinotherms connected. Infra cells up. Mega thrusters are go. Oh, man, I missed that.
That's right, fans. It's Giles Panton, the voice of Commander Keith from Voltron Force. Welcome, Giles. How you doing?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me on, man.
That was great. Thank you.
Yeah, no, seriously, I miss saying that. For a while, it was like every week. good to be back.
So you did 26 episodes of that show.
We did 26. I'm sad it wasn't 52.
Yeah, everybody was sad.
Yeah, no, it was a great run. It was tons of fun. I was just looking over it before the interview, just kind of reminiscing in a bunch of the different episodes. It was a ton of fun.
Do you have a particular favorite episode there?
Yeah, All In, Wanted, and Unwanted was my favorite. Okay. Though the Rogue, what are the exact names?
Rogue Trip.
Rogue Trip, I loved the component where Keith and Black kind of had that moment of making peace, had that moment of, hey, look, I'm on your side. That's one of the scenes I love the most, where it culminates with us sharing pizza in the hangar, but Wanted and Unwanted was my favorite overall episode, but the whole dynamic between Keith and Black and him having to earn the trust back, that was kind of my favorite little scene component from everything.
Yeah, why is Black the leader? Because he holds himself like one.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. So we've got a lot of fans that have been asking for you to be on the podcast. It's been 4 years now since Voltron Force debuted. It was the highest rated debut ever on Nicktoons for the first episode, for a premiere episode.
Yeah.
So at the time, how did you feel when you heard that for the first time?
I was excited. This was my first big cartoon, and it was so exciting for me. And when I heard the ratings, I didn't even really know how to take it. It made sense to me. It was so much fun to do, and I was just happy that everyone else had appreciated it too, or were at least anticipating it.
Yeah, there was a lot of anticipation for this one. I mean, we hadn't had a Voltron series since the late 90s with the Third Dimension. Do you remember that one?
Oh, man. Vaguely. When I was doing research for this one, I went and bought the box set of the original series. And just like the six box set with all the different lion heads for each box. The sixth box was like some kind of spaceship. I don't remember what it was.
So it was in the tins, right?
In the tins. Yeah, that one.
Yeah. Okay, so what did you think of the original series when you went and did the research?
I thought it was classic. I mean, I'm a huge, huge anime fan. Like, I love the genre. I have my Crunchyroll membership. Like, I devour this stuff.
You like Naruto, don't you?
Oh, I love Naruto. Okay. Yeah, he's fantastic.
Okay. Crunchyroll at one point had the original Beast King Go Lion. Have you ever gone back and seen that one?
No. I saw it on a thread one day, and I was so close to clicking on it, but I actually haven't looked at any old stuff.
We've talked about it at length on the podcast. Obviously, we started it at the very first episode that was released on September 10th, 1984, and we've been doing episode reviews from that point on. Every so often, we'll do four episodes at a shot.
Wow.
And we've gotten up to, I think, number 20.
Wow.
And we're still going. Basically, what happens in those episode reviews is we'll take it from both sides. We'll take it from the Americanized Voltron, and we'll take it from the Beast King Go Lion Japanese version. Mm. So we'll compare them as we're going along. And it's interesting to see the differences in some of those episodes between the Japanese and American, and to see what they cut out and why. So a lot of the fans get a kick out of that.
That's fascinating. Yeah, I prefer to watch my anime Japanese with the English subtitles. I know in that there's sometimes debate about what they actually translate and how accurately they translate it. But do they full out cut out scenes between them, or do they keep the pretty much integrity of the piece?
No, they cut out a lot because they had to, because there was like decapitations. There were.
I had a feeling the Japanese cartoons are. Like their mainstream media over there, that stuff's amazing.
Right there were some pretty bad scenes there, so they had to cut those parts out. Some of those original episodes that they had from Beast King Go Lion, they didn't have all the translations for them at the time. Some of them they did. So when they went back and wrote the American version of them, some of those they just made it up, but they were able to follow the story closely enough just by watching it and not really knowing what the Japanese meant, but just following it closely enough that they were able to get close to the storyline.
That's an interesting process.
Yeah. Did you ever get the Voltron book from Days of Long Ago? Just came out last year, October of 2014.
Oh man, I don't know. I've got a bag, like I've got a box full of Voltron swag that I haven't collected much in the last, since I was down in St. Louis, to be honest. I went down there for the premiere of Voltron Force. It was went to World Entertainment Productions headquarters. It was really cool.
Yeah, World Events Productions.
World Events Productions. Right. Sorry guys. Sorry. Very sorry.
It's okay. Yeah. So, how much time did you spend with the people from St. Louis as compared to like AOK Productions?
I've over the years I've spent a lot more time with AOK since then. But at the time, right around production, I spent a decent amount of time with the St. Louis team. I'm now good friends with AOK in Vancouver, so I see them pretty regularly around the holidays for all the parties.
Right.
Yeah.
And the voice artists that work through Vancouver, they're a pretty close-knit group, right?
That's a tight team. Yeah, I when I look back at it, I'm still pretty humbled that I managed to break into that group, because there are not a lot of people in the voice community here, and they do a lot of different amazing productions.
What enabled you to break through to the Vancouver voice artist realm?
Well, I had worked for a while in film and TV at the point that I decided to start pushing into voice work, and people have been harassing me for a little while because I just had a very resonant voice, I guess. And they said, you needed to get into it. And at a certain point, a friend of mine, Mark Hildreth, who's just done a ton of voice work as well, took me under his wing, and I made a go of it. I pushed really hard to get into it. I did some voice workshops, did some personal growth workshops, a whole bunch of different things, all tangled them together, and finally followed through and managed to break in after about 3 or 4 months of trying. But it was a huge combined effort of a bunch of mentors, a bunch of friends, and literally just sitting in my room sounding like a crazy person every day. This was back in the day when you still had handheld digital recorders before your phone was just some amazing computer. So,
right.
So I would just sit there and record voice after voice of insanity and play it back to myself and just try to get it to the point where I couldn't recognize 3 in a row as me. And I'm like, there we are. That's what we need. Ironically,
wow.
I've been hired. Most of the voices I've been hired for sound a lot like me. So I've done some incidentals and had some other fun characters in cartoons. But the main guy is basically just me, but a lot tougher.
Well, you've done live action movies. You've
yeah.
done voiceover work. You've done theater.
Yeah, at the beginning, I did a bunch of theater. Yeah.
Can you tell me what the theater is like in British Columbia?
Theater in British Columbia is definitely a passion project. You're not going to pay any bills doing it. It's a very small community. I haven't been involved in it in a while, though. I have some friends who've done some amazing projects. Theater in BC, there's a couple big production companies that just have their season runs, and you know that the show is going to be pretty good. There's a couple off. We don't have a Broadway, but might as well be off Broadway. Little production companies that do cool theater here and there. And then we have the Fringe annually, which is just a lot of fun. You get some really interesting plays that come in that way. But Vancouver's not really a theater town, though there is some great theater that happens. It was amazing for me. I had a lot of fun doing it. I did some fantastic plays. But the interesting thing about theater and voice work, actually, is when I first started doing voice work, they kept saying, think theater. It's big. Like, do it big like you're in the theater. So that was
mm-hmm.
that was a cool bridge.
But you're in a very small room.
Yeah, which was actually weird for me at the beginning, because it was like, I'm yelling, and there's a person like a foot away from me, and I'm like, are you okay? They're like, oh, I'm fine. And it's this small room. We're in a horseshoe of people. And like when I first started with Voltron Force and I was doing the fight scenes, like I almost punched my music stand over, because I was still getting used to doing full-bodied movement, but like within a confined space and keeping my face on mic, which was interesting. I'm in a cartoon right now with Vincent Tong, and he was making fun of me the other day, reminiscing back to the original Voltron Force days of he was doing his impression of me when I was first learning how to fight, and he basically just started making like kung fu sounds and walking all around the voice studio we were in, like completely off mic, just going every direction. And it was a fond memory.
Did he still have that Daniel chip on his shoulder?
Not in this one, but you know what? I love Vince. I've known him for a long time. We've known each other since high school, actually. Like,
okay.
We go way back. We went to Disneyland with the high school band back in the day. And he was in the choir, and I was the drummer in the band. And we played a song on the bandstand. I think it was Celine Dion's Titanic song. It was the most surreal, weird trip. it was a ton of fun.
Yeah, it sounds like it.
When I walked in and I saw him at the first Voltron session, I was like, Vincent! It was awesome. That room, though, mind you, that room was like full of titans. There was Sam Vincent, there was Gary Chalk, Mark Hildreth, Andrew Francis, Ashley.
Right.
It was like, it was a great place to cut my teeth on cartoons. I learned a lot from watching them.
Keith, when it was described to you what the character was, did you get a picture? How did you start?
No, I got a breakdown.
Okay.
I got a casting breakdown, and the two characters I picked to audition for were Prince Lothar and Keith.
Okay.
I got callback for both of them.
Wow.
And Mark Hildreth actually helped walk me through my Keith audition. I called him up the night before. I was so excited. I was like, can I just run this with someone who knows this industry? Because it was literally the first big cartoon. It was the first cartoon I booked. Right out of the gates, I got the lead, which was amazing. But it was just a simple breakdown. But I connected so viscerally, so strongly to Keith, to the Keith character. It was like the part I'd always been waiting to play. And Prince Lothar was a lot of fun, but I had such an emotional connection to the Keith character. And I think that's what shone through and why I ended up getting the part. But the first day when they brought us in for the first recording, it's the first time we saw pictures. And I was like, this guy kind of looks like me. I was really surprised. I'm like, whoa, does my voice match my face that much? that they couldn't think of anyone else. It was really cool.
There's actually a lot of questions about that later on. We're going to get to that, about why you look so much like your character.
But... Hey, yeah. You know what? I look a lot like all the characters I've played cartoon-wise, so maybe there's something about that, except for the weird, crazy monster ones. But
yeah. I've got a few questions I want to ask you myself before we get to the fans' questions, but there's a lot of fans' questions.
Great. I love it. I've gotten the chance to meet some of the fans through Facebook and Twitter, and I love them. They're such a cool group of people. I'm looking forward to starting to hit some of the comic conventions. I haven't done that yet, but I think I'm getting ready to in the next year or two.
Can you feel the passion they have for the characters?
Yes. I have always said sci-fi fantasy fans are like the most dedicated and loyal fans on the planet. I've been blown away. I've had some friends in different series, some of the bigger ones like Stargates and things like that. And I've got a couple friends in the My Little Pony series and just some of the other big cartoons that have huge followings. And I like the most loyal and awesome fans. So big props to all that whole crew.
And I have to tell you one thing.
Yeah.
When Voltron Force came back in 2011, it brought a lot of people back to Voltron. And it really gave people, you know, a reason to believe that we're going to see more Voltron again. Mm. So there's a lot of people there who, growing up on Voltron, Voltron helped them through their lives. And when Voltron Force came out, it was like rekindling all those things that you know, made them feel strong about themselves. And when I get together with Voltron fans, some of them tell me some of these great stories about how, you know, when Voltron Force came back, that was it. Now I'm a Voltron fan for life. It's not going to go away again. I'm here for good now.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And it's a great feeling because it's your show. You know, it's your show that made them feel that way. You know, whatever some fans will say about, you know, whether or not they like the theme song or whether or not they like the cadets, different formations and everything, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
A lot of people loved this show. You're not going to hear that from anybody else but those Voltron fans.
No, I mean, I loved it too. I watched each episode as it premiered on Nicktoons. I watched it on my computer live streaming, and it was so much fun for me. I booked off that night. I didn't care what was going on. I sat down to watch it, so I love the show too. It was my first big cartoon, and this will always have a huge place in my heart.
Another thing was there was the one episode, Drayden, Baby Drayden.
Yeah.
Where they had one of the fangirls from the Philippines that had dressed up like Voltron,
Yes.
In the actual episode.
Yeah, they did. I remembered that. I thought that was such a cool nod.
That was amazing. And then every time the episode was on, Jeremy Corey was out there live tweeting with the fans
Yeah.
from the Voltron Twitter account.
Yeah, that guy bled Voltron, man. He blew my mind. He
Well,
was one of the like the we would have when we recorded episodes, there'd be about four different people on the phone, in addition to the director and some of the Vancouver team in the room. So it was it, there was Jeremy was always very vocal about like, no, we got to do this. And it was the most it was the cutest thing at times, I swear. He was like a little excited kid about Voltron. I love that guy. Yeah.
well, he wrote the Ghost in the Lion episode. The
Yeah,
one
that's a great
with
episode.
Sven. So yeah, he's very passionate about that. I remember back when I interviewed him at St. Louis about it, and man, you couldn't stop him talking about it. But here you are, you're Keith.
Yeah.
Now, did they tell you that the actual last name was pronounced Kogane originally?
No, no, not originally. I'm like Keith Cogain. That's rounded. That's nice and well rounded.
Right. It sounds very American or Canadian, right?
Yeah, versus
Keith,
Kogane. Yeah, it makes sense.
but
Yeah.
Kogane was the original Japanese pronunciation. But there was this one particular episode where they used Commander Cogain in
Yeah.
the episode, and then Hunk made the statement, "Oh, sometimes I forget we have last names."
Yeah, totally. That
So,
was the was that that was the ghost ship one.
right,
Yeah.
Ghost in the Line.
Was it
Yeah.
ghost in was it ghost in the line
Oh,
or was it ghost, it was the ghost the I don't is it
I'm
one
so
we got that signal from space and we found an
cross
old
signals.
Yeah, that's the one.
Cross signals. That's what it was. Sorry
Yeah.
about that.
No, that's okay. It's 26 episodes to keep track of.
So when I had watched this originally, I started writing for a blog called Toon Barn, which I still write for, and I did all the episode reviews from all these episodes. So that's how, Voltron Force got me into writing and into doing, work for Toon Barn. And then since then, I've now interviewed over 200 people. I've been at, San Diego Comic-Con, New York Comic-Con, and everything. So I owe it all to Voltron, really.
Ah, wow.
So, and I was one of the writers on the Voltron book. So, yeah, I owe it all to Voltron and Voltron Force.
That's amazing, man. Wow.
Yeah.
Gives me more incentive to go take a look at that book.
Yeah. All right, so, being Keith again, Keith was played by Neil Ross originally.
Yeah.
Had you ever met Neil Ross?
No, and I haven't met him in person, but we've had some chats on Facebook.
Okay.
Yeah.
What kind of chats?
I reached out to him at one point, actually. One of my fans on Facebook is very connected to all generations of Voltron and regularly talks to everyone. And she kind of set up an introduction for the two of us, and I just said, you know what? Like, it's a big honor to be able to play Keith, fill those shoes. Like, thank you so much for leading the way. I just wanted to reach out one Keith to another and have kind of a cross-generational, I don't know, connection, like a Star
Okay.
Trek moment or something.
Well, they had actually brought those people back to do the video game, and that was just a few years ago.
Cool.
Because there was a Voltron video game that was played on the PlayStation Network and the Xbox Network.
Is that the one that came out at the same time as Voltron Force, or was that one that came
Yes.
out later? That
No,
one, gotcha.
that was around the same time. And there was something else that came out around the same time that confused a lot of people, and it made people think that there was going to be a live action movie.
Yeah,
It
I heard about that. There was a lot of rumors.
was the Timothy Olmutzen short. It was only 4 minutes long. It was called Voltron: The End, and that came out in October of 2011 after the show had come out. So people automatically started getting this excited. Oh, there's going to be a Voltron live action movie too, because Alex Albrecht had directed this short, and he did such a good job, and Timothy Olmunson did such a good job as Lance in the short. Everybody thought that was going to be the Voltron movie. And we still, to this day, get some people saying, hey, how come they didn't make that Voltron live-action movie that they made the trailer for? So that was a good time to be a Voltron fan, because you guys were doing the show. We were thinking there was going to be a second season. We were thinking there were going to be toys. And somehow
we all thought there was going to be toys. I remember talking to Jeremy one day, and he had the prototype for Black Lion in his hand on his desk. Didn't make it past the prototypes, but they at least made some toys.
Right. And I did see those prototypes on his desk too. And there were cardboard stand-ups, there were party, you know, supplies and stuff like that had Voltron Force all over them.
Yeah.
And one of the things that a lot of the fans of this podcast had requested that wasn't out yet was coloring pages. So if you actually go out to Voltron.com, you can download coloring pages of your character and all the other characters, and the kids could color them.
That's fun.
So we already found out what your favorite episode was.
Yeah.
That was Wanted and Unwanted. Before even becoming a part of Voltron Force, had you heard of Voltron before that?
Oh, yeah. No, I'd heard about Voltron. It wasn't a huge part of my childhood growing up. I was more the G.I. Joe. I was more on the G.I. Joe side of things.
Okay.
But I had definitely heard of Voltron. And I had delved a little bit into the Robotech universe when I was younger, and I had seen some Voltron stuff through that, and it was interesting to me. But no, this was when I found out I got the gig, was when I went full in and started doing all my research and connecting to the past, watching the old videos, especially for the I wanted to pay homage to Neil Ross's Activate. My brain just melted, but the Voltron startup sequence, basically.
Right.
And I did a bunch of research on that level.
That's cool. We also found out that your favorite scene was the one from, that was
Rogue Trip
where you connected with Black Lion.
Yeah. I mean, there was a lot of great moments in the whole series, but I don't know what it is. I mean, I love animals. There's just something about that moment of them earning each other's trust again, or at least Keith earning Black's trust. The upturned hand, Black almost smelling his hand, and them just having a connection. I really liked. Even though I didn't say anything, that's not a scene where there was any words from Keith. That was all animated. That's all credit to do credit given to the animation team and after the fact editors, but I really like that.
Right. Sometimes the animators have to play the character.
Exactly.
Okay. All right. There was a lot of stuff during the course of the series where, you know, either Wade or Mayhawks or Lotor was going after the Voltron Force, and they make references to not saying things like he's trying to kill us, you know, like we're not allowed to use the word kill in these things, are we?
No, there's some very strict guidelines about what can or cannot be said.
At one point, Keith says, he tried to take you out.
Yeah.
And he got really, really mad and everything. And even Allura was trying to calm you down. So it was kind of funny how, you know, they skirted around the whole killing issue.
Yeah, there's tons of workarounds. Like, there's other things also. Like, we made King Alphor. We made not a ghost, maybe a ghost, but also maybe an electronic projection, because there's some countries where they don't like ghosts. So, wow. Like, they wouldn't let ghosts be in the cartoon. And so we found all sorts of ways to skirt around that so that more people could watch the show.
Wow. That's pretty cool. We do know this show has a worldwide following.
Yeah.
Okay. And we obviously have a worldwide following on the podcast as well, because the podcast has been listened to by over 77 countries.
That's awesome.
So I know at least the show has probably been listened to by that, at least that many. So why don't we start getting into some of these fan questions, because they have a lot and I don't want to miss any of them. All right.
Yeah, love to. Let's go.
Okay. So you were getting some questions from JC Baker, who's a self-proclaimed Voltron superfan.
Yeah, she's awesome.
So what?
Yeah.
All right. Did you voice anyone else during the series?
I did. I voiced one incidental character. I believe it was in Rogue Trip. I played one of the convention attendees who just totally geeks out. it was a lot. It was a lot of fun, man. Because honestly, I am the biggest nerd. I'm like Star Wars, everything. I eat that stuff for breakfast. So it was like me basically behaving the way I would at a convention. So it was a lot of fun. Only I pretended to be like 12 or something.
Another question. How did the new Voltron compare to the old, like years-wise? Like, was it 8 to 10 years in the future from the previous version of Voltron?
Oh, wow.
Did they tell you how far in the future your cast had expanded since the original cast?
You know, no, we hadn't discussed. I thought a bit about the distance between when they lock Voltron up at the beginning of the series and when we break him back out again. But between the end of the old series to the beginning of the new one, you know, not a lot of time could have passed. Like under 10 years, I'd say.
Okay.
Because they're not. I mean, like
they don't look that much older.
They don't look that much older. Like if I was to hazard a guess, I'd say 3 years before they all got locked up at the beginning of this series, and maybe another 2 or 3 years before we broke them back out again. Right. But yeah.
Okay. What did you think of the new characters, the cadets?
Oh man, I embraced this show wholeheartedly. I was just so happy to be there, and the actors they got to play them. See, my main relationship to these characters was built through being in the room. I loved the scripts. I would sit down and read them a ton before each episode, but I loved the cadets. I felt they were a great bridge, a great way to connect to kids, but also I just loved the actors playing them. They're a ton of fun people, so that's my main relationship.
Okay. Do you think it was coincidental that Daniel and Keith almost looked alike?
Yeah, I think that's totally coincidental. I know Keith was doing a lot of planet hopping, but I don't think he was doing a lot of bed hopping too. He's Keith and Allura, right? He's a loyal he's a loyal guy. He's okay. A loyal guy through and through.
All right. Who was the better villain, Wade, Mayhawks, or Lotor?
Well, that's an interesting question, because better in what way? Like, I think Mayhawks was the most villainous. The better villain, I think... it was too bad, but, like, I think... I'm not sure if something happened with the Hegarium, like, rebirth of Lotor, but he was kind of loopy the entire time. He was on this pride kick. So I wouldn't say he was. I wouldn't. I'd say he was the least best villain of the three in this take. Wade and Mayhawks. Mayhawks is certainly the more evil, like mad scientist version. But Wade, it's a toss up between those two. Well, it's a toss up between those two. I'd say
for Wade, it was trying to get back because Voltron had rejected him.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it was almost like revenge.
Yeah, it had that feel to it. Versus Mayhawks, just kind of had this, yeah, this maliciousness about him. So I'd say Mayhawks felt a lot more evil to me. Wade, more like a calculating politician.
Yeah, yeah. All right, so let's move on to some other questions. We have one from Amber Grant.
Okay.
Amber asks, was season 2 planned for Voltron Force? Did you see any of the script, and if so, what happens between Keith and Allura?
No, I never saw any scripts. A lot of people thought it was a go. Like there was a big party at the end of the year with AOK. And even AOK thought it was going to be the announcement party for the second season. But no go. I don't really know what happened. Moving forward, Keith and Allura, they did not write what was going to happen. But But there's lots of avenues for all sorts of crazy things there.
Well, we can say this. The end of the Voltron book from Days of Long Ago has a sort of like a season two epilogue. Mm. It was written by Brian Smith and drawn by Jacob Chabot. Basically, what happened in this little comic book at the end of the book here is that Daniel with the Hegerium did eventually get consumed by the Hegerium, but it was only, you know, brought on even more so by the fact that Hagar had come back.
Yeah, I had a feeling it was going that way with Daniel.
Had Hagar not been coming back, then he might have been able to survive it. But with her influence and the Hegerium and everything, she took him in and made him stronger, evil stronger.
Yeah.
And with Lotor and Hagar and Daniel all together, they became an evil force once again. And Aris had actually been taken over and destroyed, half destroyed. So Allura had to, I mean, basically what was going to happen was Keith was going to become king with Allura. And that was, you know, evident through the end of the first season. But they were looking like they were going to solidify it. And then all of a sudden this happened with Hagar coming back. And it kind of just destroyed every chance that Keith and Allura had of getting back together, because Allura had to rebuild her planet and Keith had to go after Hagar.
Yeah, well, to be continued, huh?
Yeah, to be continued with Vince still taking Pidge's spot, Larmina still taking Allura's spot, and the others still the original. So,
that's where you got. It would have been a lot of fun, man. That would have been a fun season two.
Yeah.
Room to go.
All right. So Bambi Joe Lewis asks, did you feel daunted by playing such an iconic role since Keith is one of the most loved characters on the show?
I wasn't daunted in the scared sense. I was more really, really, really wanting to honor it. I knew how important it was to everybody. When I started to do my research, I developed a relationship within myself, and I just really wanted to honor the character and do the best job I could. So there was just daunted in the sense that I didn't want to let people down. I didn't want to disrespect Keith. So I worked hard to do the best I could to uphold that canon, you know?
Well, you started off this whole season one with a mullet still.
Yeah. That wasn't much to do with me, but that was pretty awesome. I love the jabs. I love Lance jabbing him. I think he said, you're still rocking the mullet, huh?
Yeah. All right. So another person on Facebook, Aram Vray, he wanted to let you know that he would love if someone could make a season two or a short movie to wrap up the show. Mm-hmm. And he's one of the few original Voltron fans that enjoyed the new show. And he said maybe it was because his daughter loved watching it and it grew on him after she had marathons of watching the show over and over again.
Yeah.
So I had a similar experience with my son. My son was 8 when it first came out, and he used to watch the show over and over again because we had bought the subscription from iTunes. Mm. And we just were able to keep watching it over and over and over again. And it was great.
Yeah, I heard that from a fair amount of people, actually, that they had been Voltron fans themselves, and now this was a chance for them to share with their kids, and it brought the whole family together in that way. I thought that was really cool.
Yeah, my son's favorite episode was Inside the Music.
Yeah, that one was fun.
He actually liked the Green Center Voltron, you know, with the boomerang shield.
Yeah.
Tech Ninja Voltron.
I forgot Pidge's planet, but the planet of ninjas. Yeah, that's the nod to them.
Right. All right. So Greg Tyler asks, how was a typical episode recorded? And were the individual actors recorded separately? Were some or all of them present at a given session? And if you were recorded separately, how do you best simulate interacting with characters who aren't really there?
It was full team. We did everyone. Everyone who could be there was there, unless someone was out of country or whatever it was. But yeah, we stood. Basically how it worked is we would stand in a semicircle. The open half of the circle would be against the wall with the window into the sound booth where the director and sound engineer and everyone else would be. And we'd play off each other. And to a certain degree, if you were acting with someone across the room, I mean, you'd make eye contact. You'd look up from your page from time to time and interact with them while you were running the scene. And it really helped to have everyone there because we jumped and fed off each other's energy. There was, however, one episode that I recorded on my own because I'd missed the group recording of it. I think what they did is I think the director read the line leading up to my line each time just to give me something to work off of. And I, to the best of my ability, just worked to hear the voice of the actor who actually played that character in my head and worked to just figure what they would do in that moment and play off of that. But I know for a lot of times for like the big feature films, they'll record those guys individually. So that's, I mean, that blows my mind.
Yeah, I know. That's a thing. There's also a stipulation in recording studios, at least in the US, that you can only have so many in the studio at the same time.
Oh yeah?
I think it's 12. Not that you guys had that many, but
No, I've never seen. I've had some rooms bordering on 12. There's been like 10. If I've been on a couple cartoons where there's been like 3 guest stars an episode and like 7 main cast, so it can get crowded in there.
Yeah. All right. So another question: what would Keith really do if he were to resign from the team? Do you think he would have enjoyed going from pilot to husband and possibly king?
I mean, as I said, Keith is a man of honor, so he would accept his duties wholeheartedly, but there's no way that he wouldn't disappear on the weekends at times and go like break up some smuggling ring or take down a group of mercenaries or something. He would during the week, he would uphold his duties as king and make sure that all his responsibilities are taken care of and be a fantastic husband and father. But there invariably at least one weekend a month, I'm sure he would take black or take some kind of ship and just go fight some crime somewhere.
Okay. If you were selling a Voltron feature film or another television series to a producer who had minimum familiarity with the property, how would you describe the show in a way that distinguishes it from, like, say, Power Rangers?
Because there's been some really good. And I'd have to pitch it different than like Pacific Rim and everything. I know it's very different than that. That's the most recent big robot movie I can think of in my mind.
Right, that had two pilots in it that had to work together.
Yeah. Like how? That's a tough question.
Yeah.
I'm definitely not a pitch artist, but.
Would you start with the characters of the Voltron Force and then talk about them being pilots of the robot Lions that combine to form this giant robot that saves the universe?
I'm trying to hear like a little elevator pitch in my head. I think I would start with the robots. And then link it in to the pilots from there. And then link it into this massive intergalactic threat from that point. But I think I'd more hit the angle of the really cool technology and then hit the relationship angle. I don't know, though. I mean, it depends on what Hollywood producer I'm trying to pitch this thing to.
That's true. It does make a difference, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Okay. Is it difficult to play the disciplined, scrupulous, by-the-book straight man? And how do you add more energy to such a role?
At times it was tough. At times it was tough to be so strong. I don't know, man. I just made it a ton of fun for him to smash stuff up. So there was – I can think of one – there's that one scene in particular where Keith is on his own. He's hunting down he's trying to track down Black. And he's getting close to where they're at, and he's talking to Pidge on the comms, and Pidge is desperately trying to tell Keith that he's got trouble, and Keith is yelling back like, "Yeah, I know, it's trying to blow me up right now," and like there was something about that moment where it's like that one scene kind of encapsulated Keith for me. Like Incredibly serious, incredibly strong, but loving what he's doing the whole way through. And I think that's the main way I brought life to it, was that yes, he's disciplined. Yeah, he's a wake up at 2 a.m. to train and go to bed at 2 a.m. like kind of guy. But that he loves what he's doing, and he would, like, in the middle of a battle is when he's having the most fun.
Okay. All right. Okay, Stanley Ryan Domer asks, how did you feel about Keith cutting the mullet?
The whole mullet scenario I thought was hilarious. I loved it. I'm sure Keith kept it in a box somewhere. No, probably not. But I approve of the cutting of the mullet, but I also approve of having the mullet there at the beginning for it to be remembered.
Right, to bring the two shows together.
Yeah, it was a great bridge of like, yeah, Keith has been out there so long that he hasn't had time to think about haircuts. He's just been fighting.
Right. Okay.
Hasn't been reading fashion magazines.
So I think we already answered this question. Michael Mascarello asked, were you a Voltron fan growing up?
No, I was not. Though I had heard of it, and when I got signed, fell in love with it.
What were you a fan of growing up?
Ender's Game.
Wow, Ender's Game?
Well, yeah, there was a weird thing. My neighbor had these older kids, and she gave me a bunch of their books. And there was just something about the story that I thought was so cool. I loved G.I. Joe growing up, and I loved that stuff. But I had a lot of interesting experiences when I was a kid, when I was introduced to, like, older stuff. Like, when I was young, my dad and I went to go watch Ernest Goes to Camp, and we missed the movie start time. So he's like, "Don't tell your mom." And we went and watched Hunt for Red October instead. So like, I was like 9, I don't know, 8. I was a big fan of just really adult science fiction and like Dune. I loved Dune. I made my parents rent that movie for me. Probably 30 times. Every time I went to, back in the day of the video stores, I would go to that section, and if it was in, I would rent it. Like, I just loved that kind of thing. So in a way, I was always prepping myself for a Keith type role, you know?
Wow. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. So G.I. Joe's, Dune, all that cool stuff.
All right. We have Teresa Matthews from Canada.
Yeah.
Keith had a real edge that 80s Keith didn't. Did you do research beforehand, or did you just get the scripts and go with it? Were you able to interpret somewhat, or were you given clear direction to go with the character? And how do you like the finished project?
I went with it. They gave me some scripts for the audition, and I basically developed a feel for Keith just in my relationship to those scripts, and I straight up went with it. And that's I think that's what Sean to the Voltron team when they were looking through that. There was at times direction to get a little tougher, but I brought the edge right away. And in fact, that's that scene I was talking about where Keith is being chased and he says, I know there's a problem, he's trying to blow me up right now. That was one of the audition scenes. So that,
that kind of crap.
Yeah. There was two audition scenes. One of them was that scene. And the other one was talking about, oh man, I think it was talking about Robeath's landing on Eris and how it was, we were in the battle room. It was something, but between the two scenes, I got a real feel, or at least my feel of Keith, and they liked it. So we stayed with it.
Okay. Now, did you ever work with the writers while you were in the recording room?
They were on the phone. I mean, we chatted.
Okay.
Like you weren't always, I think we always had one writer on the phone. And so we had some interplay in that respect. And, you know, I don't know how much of what we did in the room influenced what they wrote over the next couple episodes, but okay. I think that always has some effect. We never directly talked about, hey, you should do this. But, it was like a Christmas present. Every new script that showed up, I was always excited about that.
Okay. All right. So our next one is Lorraine Kiamko from Philippines.
Hi, Philippines.
Did it come as part of your research to look up or watch Toei Animation series, The Voltron Lion Force, for your direction of Keith? And I think what they're saying is the Beast King Go Lion.
No, I didn't actually watch that one. I watched I watched that metal box set. I watched some of those in my research. That's I didn't delve back into the old stuff.
Okay. In the Voltron Force episode Inside the Music, we found out Pidge has a double life as one of the members of Stereolactic.
Yeah.
Leading me to think, if you also imagine Keith has taken up a musical instrument, what do you think it would be? We also know Hunk played the guitar, too, because he was playing the guitar the one time when Alora came up to him.
Oh, Hunk played the guitar?
Yeah.
In my head, I thought Hunk was a drummer. No, what? He is. Hunk was a shredder, yeah. No, Keith would be drums all the way, man.
Okay.
Keith, come on. He's a sword fighter. Like, it's just... Come on. He dual wields. He totally, so I could totally drumsticks. There we go.
That would be cool.
Voltron powered drum set.
Yeah, I would love that. What would you like to see explored in the series about Keith?
Family history. I mean, obviously the Keith and Allura collection connection. I love that. But that one episode where we went and we started to tap into Keith's just family history. I thought that was so cool.
That was his grandfather, the one on the ship, right?
Grandfather, yeah. The lore, just the lore, like how Keith's tied into Eris, how Keith's tied into to Hagar. Is it Hagar or Hagar?
Well, here's the thing.
The debate about
it. It's debatable. We've heard both in some recordings, so it is debatable, but... one thing that was said to me before was that it was spelled H-A-G-G-A-R.
Yeah.
And that should be pronounced Hagar instead of Hagar.
Like Yagar.
Yeah. So okay. I sometimes get caught saying Hagar and I don't really mean to, but it's Hagar.
Hagar. Yeah.
So
I had a feeling.
So it's easier when you have to say Hagarium.
Yeah, it is.
Looking back at the series, what was your favorite scene with one of your fellow actors where it was fun to do it with the other actor, not necessarily the characters?
There was something with Lance. There was something with Andrew Francis. We stood next to each other in the room. I had this spot in the room where there was a ledge next to me so I could put my water bottle like at perfect grabbing height. And there was one day that we were already ripping into each other about this water bottle thing. And he was just teasing me. And then the scene that we were doing was a fight scene between me and Lance. I don't know what was going down. It must've been earlier on because there was some serious power. There was a big power struggle going on between me and Lance, but it was just fun. Because like me and Andrew had been teasing the crap out of each other before we recorded the episode, and then it just carried right over into the scene itself. I honestly don't remember the scene, but it was, I think it was in the castle, and Lance and I were beaking off at each other, and Allura puts us both in our place. I don't remember what scene it is though, but I think she basically called us boys.
That's true. I think so. Yeah. Boys will be boys.
Yeah, something like that, yeah.
All right. Was there something about Keith's character you hope or want to flesh out, given a chance, if you were able to do that in the future sometime?
Yeah. I think having the cadets there was the first time he really started to look at mentorship.
Uh-huh.
Because Keith is a leader. He's a solid team player in that sense, but he expects everyone to do their job. Doesn't always take the time to teach them how to do it. He holds very high standards, and I think moving forward, it will be interesting to see a little bit of that maturing into a true king slash true leader in that way, where he took on more mentorship. Not necessarily fatherhood, though that could happen later on. But in the way that he was kind of, he was grooming the cadets and taking that responsibility for them. I think it'd be interesting to see more of that. Because all the other fun stuff, like I'd love to see him feeling torn in some way too. Maybe some kind of power struggles. Maybe there's some history about his past. Who knows what comes up. I love the kind of turn it on its head character struggles. But I would like to see more mentorship from him too.
Okay. Do you think Keith was surprised that the cadets had made Awesometron?
No, I think by that point they had successfully already surprised me enough for me to be like, okay, that's like shocked but not surprised, like, okay, wow, like this makes sense that you guys would put this insanity together.
But that was all with Hunk's help. It was sort of like behind the scenes, and they didn't let anybody know until it was used to help. I mean, it was developed in the Hunk yard.
Yeah, I think it's one of those things where it's Keith just got to the point where he expected insanity from them, I guess. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like the kids are just running wild in the castle.
Yeah.
So I mean, Keith's a great strategist. So he's always one step ahead. I don't think he thought that it would be in the form of some creation that they put together. Some new robot, but I think he was able to adapt to it pretty quickly.
I think one of Keith's most frustrating times was during Flash Forms Ago, when they couldn't figure out how to form Voltron because the eye kept on, you know,
oh, yeah,
so fast it kept on stopping him,
smashing us apart. Yeah,
right. And during that time after they had come back to the castle and tried to regroup, he told Pidge, you know, we need to figure out a way to stop this thing, and you've got about 6 hours. And during that time, Lance was being approached by Daniel about the whole thing, about him having that speed power and everything, and why not give me a shot and take Red Line and see what we can do and all that. And Lance wouldn't let him. And then he went and did it anyway.
Yeah.
And then they came back after having all that new information and having seen it work. And Lance was furious. And he was more about teaching them discipline. And your character said, no, they learned something about it that we didn't know. And,
yeah,
you know, we need to work with this and see what we can do, because this is our only shot. So yeah, you had to put Lance in his place a few times.
Well, I think that's why Keith was number one and Lance was number two.
Yeah, that's right.
No, for real. Like in a lot of ways, I think Daniel reminded Keith of himself when he was younger. Mm-hmm. But though he could get hot-headed at times, I think Keith was always able to put aside his pride to just look at what was best for the team, and that's where Lance failed. I mean, he was red. He was hot-headed, literally.
Lance did keep his emotions on his sleeve a lot.
Yeah. And it was needed. I mean, it was very needed for the team, but not that couldn't be present as a full lead of the team.
Okay. Cubby Barry in Australia asks, how did it feel lending your voice to an iconic character such as Commander Keith? And then, could you still remember if there were any animation artists around when you were recording Voltron Force? She wanted to know if there was a reason why the newly redesigned characters had an uncanny semblance to their voice actors, or was that just a coincidence?
Honestly, I think that was a straight up coincidence. I just think there was. I never saw someone hiding in the corner with a sketch pad while I was recording sessions, or even in the callbacks. Because come the first day of the cartoon, they unveiled the pictures, and they were pretty close to each of us already. I just think there was something about the energy that we brought that fit those characters so well that we just happened to look that way too. Maybe they got all our headshots and drew pictures. I don't think that happened.
Right. Yeah. I mean, they had already had an idea of how they wanted Lance and Keith and Pidge and Hunk and everybody to look.
But, yeah, they would have had that a while ago. Yeah.
Right. Right. So the last question from the fans is, what one word can you share to describe your experience working in the Voltron Force series?
Oh, man, it was epic. The whole thing. The whole thing was just epic. From all the episodes to, like, I would be in my room at home practicing the activation sequence, just like roaring it, loving it. Like, it was so epic. All the way down to when we went down to St. Louis for the premiere, it was just like the whole, yeah, epic. Did I say epic?
That's a good word. That's a good word. Yeah. Voltron is an epic story. I mean,
yeah.
So you take it from the time where Voltron was broken apart into the five lions because he got too arrogant. You know, he was saving everything, and he thought he could do no wrong and everything, and got a little arrogant, and the queen of the universe said, "That's it. We gotta put you in your place. From now on, you're going to be broken up into these five lions, and then it's going to be five people coming together to form one giant robot that's going to make this thing work. And they have to work together as a team or it won't work." So that came through in your series big time. I mean, there was no doubt about it, that when you guys were working together on all cylinders, that was when Voltron was at its best. So I want to thank you for coming onto the podcast with me and sharing this time with us, because there's a lot of people out there that still love this show, you know, even though it's been off the air and everything. But it was something that brought a lot of Voltron fans back to Voltron to stay. And that's an important thing.
I'm happy about that. I'm glad to be able to share the time. Firstly, this was like a fun nostalgic moment for me. Even though it was only what, 3-4 years ago, it was
right.
It was nice. Thanks, man. I appreciate it.
No, thank you. We would like to give you an opportunity to plug whatever you've got going on right now. So if there's something else we can see you in, we would love to see you.
Top secret, man. I've got two huge cartoons coming out in 2016, but top secret. I can't say anything. I could probably give you guys a heads up come February. What's going on? Maybe January, but there's going to be some worldwide stuff coming out soon, which is a lot of fun.
Wow.
So, yeah. No, it's been a great year. I got lead in these two series that are about to come out, so I'll let you guys know soon enough. And there's some film and TV stuff coming out soon too, but everything's secret at the moment. I can't plug it, any of it. I'm so sorry.
That's a shame. Yeah. Well, we get that a lot, believe it or not, especially comic book writers and artists and stuff like that. They say they can't talk about it yet. And
well, you'd be surprised, man. You'd be surprised how much stuff gets like snatched up. Like how many times have you seen like three companies produce the same movie at the same time? It's because somebody was like, "Hey, they're doing that. Let's go make it too."
Right. Right. Well, there were four production companies involved with Voltron Force. There was AOK Productions. There was Five Lions Productions. There was Kickstart Productions, and there was World Events Productions. I mean, that's just amazing. There's a lot of suits there.
That was a lot of weight. Well, no, seriously, when we recorded, there was a lot of people on the phone, and it was intense at times to have so many different opinions, but it was really cool. We fashioned a great product as a result, which isn't always the case.
Right, but did that slow things down for you guys?
You know, man, for me, very, very rarely.
Okay.
Sometimes in pivotal scenes, there'd be two different viewpoints, and they'd kind of hash it out. But in general, they worked well together. I mean, like the whole from where I was sitting, the whole ethos of team really was really sunk into everything.
Okay. Was there anybody in particular from the cast that you hang out with a lot now that that's over?
Of all of them, I probably see. I connect with Hildreth a decent amount, Mark Hildreth. And then I see Vincent Tong all the time because we're doing projects together. Mm-hmm. And then every once in a while, Andrew Francis. I really like that guy. He was there from the beginning. We went to acting school together before I got into voice work. So I did some pretty intense like acting scenes with him before I even knew he was a voice actor.
Well, he became the lead character in Dino Trucks.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, it's huge. So I'd say those three guys the most. Hildreth, and then Vincent Tong, and then Andrew Francis.
Okay. Well, I do have to say, we can't wait to hear when it's not top secret anymore, what you do have going on next, since those are lead roles. So we are looking forward to that. Will you be announcing it on like Twitter or something, or Facebook or anything like that?
Yeah. Once it starts, once they start pumping out the media, then I'll make some big posts on Twitter and Facebook to let everyone know what's going on with those for sure.
Okay. Can you let everybody know what your Twitter handle is?
Yeah. At @G_Panton. So Panton. Please add. I literally write on Twitter that I treat Twitter like I treat my plants. Sometimes I forget about it. For the most part, it's just fine. So Twitter, my Twitter will be active lots, and some days not.
Okay, so sometimes it'll wilt, but other times it'll stand straight up.
Sometimes it's the brightest plant in the forest, and other days you're like, what's that? What's that over there?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Twitter.
Okay, well, I want to thank you once again for joining us on Let's Voltron, the official Voltron podcast, and we look forward to hearing all the things that are coming for you in your career, because you deserve it, because you were our Keith.
Oh, thanks, man. I really appreciate that.
And I want to thank all the fans who brought you to the podcast, because it's the fans that really drive this podcast, so I just want to thank all the fans for bringing you here.
Well, huge thank you to them too. I appreciate them pushing for it. And if everyone likes us enough, I don't have a problem doing another one in the future. It'd be fun.
Oh, that'd be great. You heard it here, folks. If you like this podcast with Giles Panton, let Giles know on his Twitter feed. Let us know at letsvoltron.com or the Facebook page or on Twitter at @letsvoltron. We need to know your feedback so we know we can bring Giles back for a second round. And maybe he'll be able to tell us about his new projects then. Until then, we'll see you next time on
Let's Voltron.